This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, a trio of Cape Bretoners all on a different path leading them to the Coast Airways. One has enough passion for fitness to encourage you to spend more time exercising than watching TV. Another probably didn't have much time for anything other than playing his piano during a music marathon unlike anything you've heard of before. And Paul McDougall tips off on the good sentence with a local basketball coach, and they chime in to talk about the Olympics, the NBA, and the CBU women's team. These stories are coming up on the Coast. Her day job is a nurse, but this week Elaine Schwartz is speaking for the Heartland Tour, a public awareness and engagement campaign presented annually by the Cardiac Cycling Society of Nova Scotia. Elaine will tell us the Heartland Tour is virtual again this year, and she stresses the importance of getting a move on to keep your heart pumping.
Our team of volunteers works with private and public partners, community leaders, and people like you to encourage Nova Scotians to choose a more physically active lifestyle. We are Nova Scotia we're a registered non-for-profit society that is volunteer-led and operated, and 2021 is our 15th year offering free community-based opportunities for people to get out for and to discover the joy of physical activity.
And the Heartland Tour this year, it's virtual again. Can you talk a little bit about the background and what COVID-19 has done to the dynamics for this project, please?
Yeah, sure. The Heartland Tour, over 15 years ago, two brothers, actually, from Whitney Pier in Sydney here, moved to Halifax. One is a cardiologist and one is a cancer oncology surgeon, and they decided that they would probably try to begin some kind of a campaign in to motivate people to switch from a sedentary lifestyle into a more active lifestyle to prevent comorbidities and morbidities. And so they were on the bikes themselves and they were cycling, and they figured this was a very good exercise for all alike, even for those with joint problems and certain disabilities. And it became a community event throughout the province. So stretching from Yarmouth up to Annapolis Royal, New Glasgow, Truro, Halifax, Anakinish, and of course, you're looking at Cape Breton as well. They come into the community, and the people of each community claim ownership to the event each year. For a day that year, the community gathers and they do whatever physical activity it takes to kind of promote physical activity as part of our normality or living experience. So the last 2 years, what happened here was because of COVID-19, we had to reduce the event from community gatherings to virtual. So last year in 2020, we had a virtual Heartland Tour, and so everybody registered virtually, and they took pictures of themselves or they took pictures of cattle or cows, and I'll explain that, because there's prizes to be gotten. And they kept a personal log that you can download from the registration form online, and then they sent the log in at the end, and there were prizes given out. Anyway, it's more of a, it's all free, it's all good. It's just a motivational campaign and engagement campaign to engage the communities together and to engage people together. A sedentary lifestyle presents evidence that it contributes to many morbidities. You know, we know that cardiovascular disease and cancer are correlated to, a sedentary lifestyle, but it also, sedentary lifestyle also includes increased social isolation and mental illnesses. So we are social beings that thrive on mobility of whatever level, interaction with other people. We need the fresh air, and all of us need this for the extension of benefits physical activity has on the total well-being of ourselves. And this is basically what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people to just move more and to get out there. And the registration is free. You get a free T-shirt that is provided by our sponsors. You can get prizes, but it's also geared for different levels of activities. You know, it's so there's five different challenge options. The first one being get up and move challenge, which is that's for people that just aren't sure whether they want to become more active or not. So getting started could be a challenge for you. So you set your own goal. It's whatever works for you. The second one is the 150 challenge. And of course, this is back from last year. So we know that at least 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous physical activity is nationally established physical activity. And that's our goal, to maintain health and well-being. That's the minimum. And then the third option was the Blue Nose 100 Challenge. I guess everybody, all Nova Scotians know that this is the Blue Nose's 100th birthday. And so the aim here is to achieve at least 150 minutes a week. But during week three of the three-week virtual challenge, it would include 7 days where you do at least 100 minutes or more of physical activity. A physical activity could mean gardening, it could be fishing, it could be grocery shopping, it could be vacuuming, lawn mowing with music, it could be just whatever you choose. There are prizes from the Blue Nose 100th celebration, and they are 99.9% pure silver dollars, and they're limited edition, and those prizes will be given out to certain individuals who do their logs and send their logs in. Also, they're giving out the silver coins for every 500th registrant, and of course registration continues until July 29th, which is the last day of the virtual challenge. Anyway, back to the other, the challenges. The fourth one is the youth challenge. So we know that youth need more physical activity than an adult. So we're challenging the youth to get out there and to have 60 minutes a day challenge. And of course, the real tough challenge is the 2,400 minutes. That's for those elite athletes. You could exercise up to 150 minutes each week with a grand 3 week total of a goal of 2,400 minutes. It would take someone to cycle from Yarmouth to Sydney 800 kilometers at 20 kilometers an hour. It takes 2,400 minutes, and that's where that came from. So really, there's stuff here from everybody. We did have the Heart and Lung group with us here in Cape Breton, and they joined us and they did the walks around Greenlink Park. We do 3 kilometer walks, 5 kilometer walks, whatever you choose to do, as long as you go virtual. If you have any problem at all with registration, all you have to do is email, go on to the site, heartlandtour2021.ca, and go in and look at the, click on register, and notify us, and we will guide you through it. We can help you through it. There's no problem with that whatsoever. Yeah, and we've had some real hero stories. We've got some very positive results from people on our core team here that were actual cancer survivors and heart surgery survivors, and they're out there and they're on their bikes, and but because they got it, they finally caught on and they're finally moving forward, and their life is much more improved, and it's their personal life is also improved as well. I don't know. Hello.
Oh, hello. No, I'm still here.
I got dead space there.
Oh no, please. Yeah, please continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that we're trying to get people to move, basically move. The average age, Dr. Nick would tell you, he's the cardiologist, he's the founder of this. He would say, listen, he said, I see people in the cardiac unit at the infirmary in Halifax, he said, and they come there from all over the Maritimes, as we know. especially Nova Scotia. And he said, unfortunately, he said, we come first in many things in Nova Scotia, but unfortunately we come first in as far as heart disease, and the age is much, much younger than the other provinces. And the other thing too, of course, is cancer, and his brother would speak on that. So we have to really look at things and say, why is the average age, dropping down in the coronary care units? Why was it 72, 15 years ago, and now it's 52? What's happening here? What can we do to litigate? What can we do to reduce this? What can we do to get people to enjoy their quality of life a little bit better than before? So, sedentary lifestyle we thought would be ideal, but now we know that it isn't. And there's nothing like it when you go for a nice long walk with a good friend or with a spouse or with someone, and you come back and you just feel good. You think better. I know before I train or before I exercise, I feel so, but when I'm coming back, the sky seems bluer. I got anything that was in my head stress-wise, I seem to have sorted my thoughts out. So it's a win-win situation, really. And it's baby steps. I get it. I understand that. But the thing is if we don't start somewhere, it's life is going to pass us by. And then, and then if we end up with a condition, and I'm not saying this prevents all illnesses, definitely doesn't, but if you were diagnosed with a cancer or a heart disease, you've got enough on your plate to deal with at that time of diagnosis. You've got treatment, you've got, your future to look at. Well, the last thing you want to do is have guilt to deal with as well, knowing that you could have made your recovery a little bit easier, much easier. It's evidence-based that people that are fit usually recover from cancer and heart disease much better, and to say the least of what this is doing for mental health. I can't even explain the difference that this would do for people. I almost want to get involved in, as a spin instructor and a fitness instructor as well, I almost want to get into the mental health department and say, okay, everybody, instead of taking your medication, let's everybody get on the spin bike for an hour. And then after you're finished your exercise, let's see how your thoughts are. Let's see how do you feel about yourself? It's so important. Exercise is so important because we're made for it. We're human beings and we're mammals, and we have to. So we have to move.
Speaking of mammals, Elaine,
I don't know what else to say. Can you tell I'm in the sciences?
Yes. I'm glad you said that, because it reminded me of something you said earlier. You said, I think we were talking about the Heartland Tour, and you said mentioned something about taking photographs of cows and cattle. You said you were going to go back to that. Could you go back to that? Oh, my gosh, please? Yes.
Because the dairy farmers of Canada are offering some gift certificates. So they'll be looking at some photos of cows from people when they do their virtual tour. So if you're cycling or walking or something, and there is a cow, like I know in industrial Cape Breton, there isn't a lot of cattle we can walk by, but the rest of the province, there's quite a bit of farmland, especially in the valley and in Anakinish and Pictou and those areas. So they want a picture of you with your T-shirt on by the cows. And, of course, there's prizes available for that. There's gift certificates from Dairy Farmers of Canada, which are one of our sponsors. The other very large sponsor, along with the Dairy Farmers of Canada and the Blue Nose 100 anniversary, is Wild Blueberry Producers Association of Nova Scotia. And I would like to take a few minutes to talk about this prize.
Sure.
Because I would like to see the community in Cape Breton win this prize. So this here is sponsored by the Wild Blueberry Producers of Nova Scotia, and it's a cash award going to a recreation trail project to the most active community competition across the province. So what happens is when you register, you put in your email address. By the way, registration is totally private. And when you put your email address in, they categorize that to county in the province. And if the county with the most amount of registration registers gets $2,500, and the $2,500 goes to a trail in your community, you know, for repair or for upkeep or whatever, you know, whatever needs to be done in that community. So, yeah, I love this one. And I know how active people are here. I'm involved with the Bellard. I'm not involved. I do the Bellard Trail. I do the Coxies Mountain Trail. I do Petersfield Park all the time. I walk the streets. I cycle the roads. Yeah, so I could see my friends and my colleagues and my neighbors, especially since COVID. I see a lot of people out walking. If they registered, it would. We might have a chance to win this. You know, this is a good thing here. And of course, the sponsors are good people. These are Blueberry Producers of Association of Nova Scotia. So we're sponsoring each other, really. We're reckoning. And I mean, blueberries, what better food could you have? So.
Well, Elaine, I hope your passion is contagious for anyone who is out there listening and they want to make a change in their life. Good luck to you on the Heartland Tour.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll catch up. We can do this again next year.
Thank you so much.
This week on The Good Sentence with Paul McDougall, Fabian McKenzie is the longstanding coach of the CBU women's basketball team, and they're going to discuss the past year with the team not playing, the upcoming AUS season, his role with the Canadian National Junior Basketball Team, the Olympics, and his picks for this year's NBA champ.
So, Fabian, why don't we start off and just tell our listeners here at the Coast, you know, what the last year at CBU as a coach has been, like what you've been doing with the players or not doing them with them or whatever. Tell us how the last year went.
Yeah, well, it was kind of like the Twilight Zone, the unexpected. We were very, very blessed, in a sense, to have some players be able to make it to campus, you know, to do workouts. We were permitted, you know, when it was allowed, based on the rules, we were allowed to have people in for workouts. So we had like 8 or 9 players in. We couldn't get our whole team in. We were permitted by the AUS to have what they called member-driven exhibition games. We never got to have any because we didn't have enough players. And then other teams wouldn't come here and we couldn't go there. Basically, there was a setup where, you know, we could go play St. of X, and then they were, you know, possibly going to come here, and then that couldn't work. So we never got any games in, but the kids were able to come here and at least have some sense of normalcy with practicing and working with each other. That got a little bit, you know, like anything, you're with the same people every day. It gets a little boring, but we were able to make some progress in skill development and everything else. But we biggest thing we did was talk to the players about resiliency and learn how to get through this together.
Mm-hmm. So, would you do like little scrimmages? You'd take like 4-on-4 or things like that with them?
Oh yeah, we did a lot of skill work, and then we tried to play competitive stuff with it. Like we really worked on the individual development because we weren't sure from day to day. You know, if we had a little, you know, little injury here or there, we're down bodies, but we would do a little 4-on-4 and stuff like that to be competitive, to give them something, you know, to go at each other with, kind of thing, because kids love to compete. But it was a challenge, but it was really good from the standpoint of helping them get better and helping them grow in a non-pressure environment. So there wasn't pressure to get ready for a game this weekend or next weekend. It was just we got together, we, you know, took our time with the pace of doing things, and we did a lot of team stuff, like building the connections with each other. So a lot of good stuff that way.
Yeah, because that's all very important.
Big time, yeah.
Yeah, so did you have any, did you have new women to the team this year?
We did. We had some new players. Now, some of them could make it to campus, some couldn't. So that was another interesting part. But we had new players, and while we were, you know, working with them, we're trying to recruit players without seeing them play and without having, because really nobody had a season across the country to play in. You know, so we're trying to recruit new players without watching kids play, and it was just a whole interesting year right across the board.
Yeah, so let's talk about eligibility then. So say that new student or two new students or whatever, they're on the team, but they don't get to play. That doesn't take a year off of them, does it?
No, everybody was given basically a bonus year here. So the slate was wiped clean. So let's say a player that was in her fourth year with me this year, she gets to return next year, the coming year here, and is in her fourth year again.
Yes.
And the new kids that come in this year and practice with us, I think they don't lose any eligibility. So they start in September as a rookie with next year's rookies. So yeah. They just, everybody got a freebie right across the country.
Normally, AUS, it's 5 years. Is that right?
You're correct. You get 5 years right across the country. But the other challenge now, Paul, is you always want to have your players for all of their eligibility. But with this sitting out year, very few players will play 5 years that were in the system now, because it'll end up being a sixth year, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, exactly.
They won't do it. So it will lose some players, but again, just something we have to learn how to pivot and work around.
Yeah, because the students that were here were, for our CBU ones, they were all studying online because they're a student.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, the opportunity is there maybe to play more, but they're already into it a year of school, but at least the chance is there if someone is continuing on.
Exactly. If they want to use it, great. If not, they've gotten what they came to get, kind of thing. They got their degree and off they go. So, the university sports system across the country did a really good job with supporting the athletes and trying to help them be ready for whatever was coming. And then when the season started getting canceled, they put these rules in to kind of, you're allowed to play an extra year. So it was really good for them to kind of help the athletes get through it.
Yeah, and on the local, the provincial level, I would assume the AUS would have been talking to all the premiers and the public health bosses and all that, correct?
Yeah, they were trying to get a season underway to play, and there was only a couple of games that played. They played one game, official game, it was Acadia Men versus St. of X Men, because Steve Kanchelski, who coached for, 42 years or whatever, it was his last year, and they wanted one more game for him, so that was it. There was a couple of scrimmages happened, but the AUS tried and just couldn't get it off the ground with the public health officials, and it was the best interest of the athletes and the people involved, so they made sure to, the health was first.
Yeah, that was nice that St. of X did have Coach K on the floor one last time for his last time.
Yeah, I mean, when somebody puts in that much time to the game, given so much time, and has been around, if you look at all the other coaches, he started coaching, before some of them were born.
Yeah.
And he's been coaching longer than anybody. If you add the whole league up, he's probably coaching longer than them. So something had to be done for him there to send him off the right way. So
yeah, no, that was kind of nice when that happened.
Yeah.
So we heard a couple of weeks ago the AUS plans are, as long as COVID doesn't interfere, it's all sports are on, right? Full tilt, open for the fall?
Yeah, I mean, there's coaches and players everywhere, getting rabbit's feet, picking four-leaf clovers. They're figuring anything out to keep the luck going that it'll happen. But it is full steam ahead for next year, as long as the health protocols stay in place here. And what they call whatever it is, the physiology or whatever it is of it, they want to make sure that it's all good, and then we're good to go. But the teams and the coaches and players are putting in the protocol plans now, so I think you're going to see it happen.
Yes, the epidemiology of
epidemiology is the word I was looking for. Yes.
Yes, physiology is more your world.
Correct. Yeah.
That's right. So do you think? Any talk of fans being allowed? I suppose something like soccer and football be easier outside.
Yeah, the outdoor sports will be much easier. I would assume there's a plan in place based on the restrictions at the time, if they're going to allow whatever the government will allow. I know CBU will do their best to allow it. We got a great team there that's working to help us, get back to work and get back to playing and everything else. So whatever the government will allow, they'll make sure it's looked after coming into the field house. It'll be a little bit easier at the health recreation complex for the soccer teams because, of course, being outside. But I'm sure the protocols will be followed to the letter. So.
Yeah, and for basketball, it wouldn't be till November anyway. So
that's right. So we're gonna, I think we're gonna be okay there. By that time, we should be allowed to have fans in, and there'll be people in the building.
Yeah, that'll be really something to look forward to. Was the men's team? Did they have a few players around in the past school year as well?
They had a little more than we did, but they had a lot of guys on campus as well, so they'd get in the gym and work out the same way.
Mm-hmm. Right on. So. That's all good on the local front, and so we'll wish you best of luck with that. But you're also you've also been working with the Canadian National Junior Women's Team over the past number of years, correct?
Yeah. So yeah. I've been with Canada Basketball now for 14 years, the national level, doing every level. From the senior team to I coach the development team, which is like a junior, like a senior B team, whatever it is. And now I'm coaching the junior team. We're supposed to go to World Championships last year. That got canceled, of course. It's slated for August 7th this year. It's still a go. It's a matter of everybody getting looked after. I know I'm waiting for my second vaccination and hoping that can get done. And get myself on the way because we have to be fully vaccinated to go and it's been a challenge that way to find a place to train with the athletes from all over the country, and some of them are going to school in the United States, so that's a challenge as to where we're going to train and how we're going to do it. And then the protocols are incredibly strict going overseas and then playing in a world championship. The protocols are like, the World Organization has a set of protocols that are incredibly strict, but Canada Basketballs go even more than that. So our number one, two, three, and four goal is looking after the safety of the players and the staff and everything else. But it's been a fun experience working with athletes at that level and getting them ready for a World Championship for sure.
Yeah, and if this tournament is set for Hungary, right?
Yes, it is. It's in Hungary with the best teams in the world, and we're looking at can we get our best players there and all that. Still, we're trying to work all those details out, but could have a pretty good shot if we get all the pieces in place, and we could have a pretty good shot at making a good run in that tournament. But it's never easy.
Is it this junior team? Is this age based?
Yeah, it's all 19 and under. So we would have the opportunity to have basically all first-year players in NCAA or Canadian University and below that. So we have a lot of graduating high school players. We have a lot of players in our pool that are based in the NCAA in the United States. Some of the best young players, like right now, some of the players that could be playing on the junior team are playing in the FIBA AmeriCup right now, which is it's just a tune-up to qualify for the AmeriCup for next year, but also tune up for the Olympics. And two of the players that could play for me are playing on the senior team right now and helping the team compete for that. So it's a high level of players.
Yeah, are you involved in picking the players for the team?
Yeah, we're always involved. There's a large group. It's not just me. There's a large group that's involved as a committee, and they're always identifying talent and working on selecting who's going to be where. But it's the coaching staff is eliminated at this level due to, they want to remove the political side and the favoritism. Canada Basketball is what we call a targeted athlete strategy right across the country, and there's targeted athletes within the program. So right now we have 35 on our final watch list, and we'll pick 12 out of that list and go to Hungary with them.
Wow. So let's say in the before times, before COVID, all the women on that team, would you play, like an meet and train in Ottawa or Toronto or something like that?
What we would do most of the time is we would train in Toronto or Edmonton. Edmonton is the home base of our senior women's team and home base of Canada Basketball's program for playing and practicing, but often it's in Toronto, and we would have throughout the year, we would have what we call a Christmas camp. So we'd have one in December, and then we'd have a March camp. So, right around March break time, we'd have two camps throughout the year for the under 19 and under 17 age groups. And then we would pick from that to go into the training camps for the summertime. We haven't been able to have those camps since 2019, December of 2019. So, we're basically doing a lot of online stuff and knowledge of what we know of players, and some players are able to play, some aren't, so we can see them the best we can and trying to keep the pool broad.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of challenges there. If, you know, if you get the go-ahead to be able to go, and then it's a matter of, you know, can you really go and all
yeah,
that. So
there's all kinds of challenges, and right now we're looking at, you know, if something were to happen, this tournament could get canceled based on, you know, if some teams decide not to go, like, you know, bigger teams decide, hey, we can't go because of the danger, of, or if Hungary's COVID cases climb and they decide to cancel it. But you could get over there, one or two players with COVID, and that's it for your tournament.
That's it, yeah. Unfortunate. So, yeah, lots to think about. Let's just talk about the Olympics then, because that's not too far away. So, as far how I understand, let's say the men's team, there's actually a qualifier round to see which teams go to the Olympics. Is that how that's done?
Yeah, well, there's qualifiers on both sides.
Okay.
The women earn the right to, they earn the right to go in. Our women's national team has come in the last 10 or 12 years, has come from like 16th or 18th in the world, and right now they're number 4.
So they're always, they've already qualified.
Like, they've already qualified on the women's side. So they qualified last year at a tournament in Belgium.
Okay.
They won that tournament and qualified. The men did not qualify. They didn't play because of COVID, and so they got fined, and there was a big fiasco around that. And now there's a qualifier being hosted, actually, in Vancouver. And I believe it's early July, late June, early July, and there's a qualifier there, and if Canada wins that qualifier, they can go to the Olympics. But there is qualifying tournaments the year before, and then there's basically the losers of those qualifying tournaments go to one final qualifying tournament, which is what's happening in Vancouver. So they could still get there on the men's side, and they've got a lot of talent, so they could get there.
Yeah.
Women have already qualified.
So the Vancouver one, you have to win the tournament, is it?
Basically win the tournament or maybe top two, but you've got to be in the elite level to get there and get out of that to the Olympics.
So that now I understand that team now is down in Tampa where the Raptors played training in that.
The women's team is down there. The men's team is not yet, but the women's team was down there, and now the women's team is in Puerto Rico playing in this AmeriCup qualifier, which is basically the North American, South American teams compete to play next year. There'll be what they call the AmeriCup, which is a qualifier for the World Championships. But on the women's side, they're in Puerto Rico right now, and then they're going to go back to Tampa and train and then go to the Olympics from there. So they're not coming back to Canada. They're going to be on the road forever.
Oh, my God almighty. In still in the COVID situation. Wow.
Still in a bubble, still locked down all the time.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So the women look good for the Olympics. The men, if they get there, they have Nick Nurse as the coach. What do you think?
They have Nick Nurse as the coach. They've got some very, very good players if they all play. There's a couple that have opted out. They lost one of their best ones to injury. But they do have enough, I think, to make it through and qualify. They've got the right coaches. They've got some talented players for sure. So they've got the right players. They just got to get through this one qualifier, and they could make it because Canada on the men's side is still quite young, and their stars are quite young. So there's a very bright future there, I think.
Yeah, it seems, you know, over the years where, you know, when you talk about on national stage and that Canada's basketball and Canada are starting to be a force, more players in the NBA and the WNBA, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, if you look at the NBA players from Canada, they're getting better and better and better. And, you know, there's more and more every year. I think we're producing the second most amount of players outside of the United States for the NBA from a specific country. And, you know, NCAA coaches are coming to Canada more to recruit. The top players are, you know, a lot of top NCAA players are from Canada. So, you know, the future is really bright.
Yeah, that'd be really encouraging for people like yourself and Matt Skin and Doug Connors, everybody, the CBU gang, they're all involved in this, right?
Yeah, it's good to watch for us to see, you know, that basketball in Canada is on a high level and it's growing. It's great for the young players to see that there is a pathway. You can get there, and you can take any pathway to get there. There's kids that have gone to Canadian universities that are playing on the men's and women's senior national team. There's kids that go to the, you know, U.S. universities that are on both. There's all kinds of paths, but it shows these kids that, you know, basketball is legit in this country, and it's good. You know, you can make it to that level if you put your, you know, your mind to it and really work at it.
Yeah, the whole Raptors thing a couple of years ago, I mean, that certainly helped.
Huge. That, like, winning in that, you know, that environment, you know, Canada went basketball crazy, and yeah. that's a great thing. It's a sport that anybody can play. It doesn't cost a lot, and it can touch all cultures. And you know, it's not an exclusive sport like some of the sports you get where it really costs a lot of money to play. Basketball is not like that, and it's really friendly across the board. So,
yeah, I mean, you got a decent pair of sneakers with shoelaces in them, right? That are
that's all you need.
That's pretty well all you need, eh?
You know, somebody will have a ball. Yeah. All you need is a pair of shoes.
Someone will always have a ball, and you can bounce it literally anywhere.
Yep. So it's an easy game to get involved in. We just got to keep getting people involved and keep growing the game and helping kids love it. And that's what's happening because, you know, they're loving the Raptors and everybody else. So we keep doing that. We're going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the NBA then. That's still going on. A lot of the big teams are out of there, and big stars like LeBron and Steph Curry,
yep.
they're all doing whatever they do now because they're out. What do you got? Any predictions?
Well, there's so many injuries that happen and things that go on, and but I, you know, for the way they play, I mean, I think the Western side, like the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns, those two teams are going to be scary. They could, you know, either one of them could win it right away.
Yeah.
If the injuries didn't hit the New Jersey Nets, they probably would have been a favorite easily. But the injuries hit them, and but I'm still thinking, you know, Phoenix or Utah could sneak one out here and win it.
Well, there you have it, Phoenix or Utah. CBU coach Fabian McKenzie telling you where you should put your bets down, eh?
That's it. Put your money on them and lose the money.
That's right. So, listen, Fabian, just want to wish you good luck on behalf of all the basketball fans in and around Cape Breton, the Capers fans. We're looking forward to an interesting year. Basketball, men's and women's, and the two soccer teams and all that. So, things are looking good on the athletic front.
Yep, things are going good, and you know, we appreciate the best wishes. We want to represent the community with pride, and we want to, you know, be a real blue collar type athletic department like Cape Breton is. You know, hard work and just get it done.
Exactly. Okay, thanks, Fabe.
Okay, buddy.
Adam Young's yearbook is unlike any other. Imagine writing music every day for a whole year.
So on January 1st, 2018, I found myself sitting at home on New Year's Day, not really with anything to do. So sitting down on my couch, I decided that I would try and write a tune. And I ended up writing a jig that I called The New Year. And when I was done writing it, it only took like maybe 10 minutes to write. I just said that wasn't all that difficult. I should try and do this a bit more often, and maybe I can challenge myself to write one tune every single day this year. But anyway, at the end of the year, December 31st, 2018, I had a few more than 365 tunes. There were a couple of days that I actually wrote more than one. But mission accomplished. I got the 365 tunes written, and then I had to figure out what to do with them. So I spent most of 2019 going through the tunes and just reviewing them and seeing which ones I liked and which ones I didn't like. And then in 2020, started to compile and do the layout for a tune book, which was released just before Christmas of 2020, also called Yearbook, which features 189 of those tunes. And then in 2020 and 2021, I was in the studio busy recording a double album of the project, which features, I think, a total of 39 of the tunes that you'll find in that tune book as well. Anyway, yes, that album just came out on June 4th. Yeah, that was the finishing touch on the project, I guess, which has lasted 3.5 years.
So what was it like to decide what to leave in or what to leave out, Adam? Did you have some kind of a system, or did each piece of music have to meet a certain criteria?
I think if I were to go through all 365 again and rank them again, I would have a far different opinion on some of them than I had when I was doing it. Because it's funny, like, you sit down when you have a minute and just start going through tunes, and I gave them all a rating between 0 for absolutely terrible to 10, which is like, I actually really like this too. And surprisingly, there were a couple that I allowed myself to give a 10. I think a lot of it had to do with just what mood I was in, how much I liked or didn't like something. And then there were some that I'm sure are empirically bad. But, yeah, I don't know. Things are so subjective with that. I know my own opinion on some of them have changed, and my own opinion on some of the tracks that I've recorded, too, has changed, too.
What's your background in music? Have you been doing this for a long time?
I started taking piano lessons when I was about 5 years old and stuck with that until I was in my early 20s. But no, like, university training or anything like that. Just playing piano accompaniment for local fiddlers, and started a show at the Lewisburg Playhouse in 2002, which I wrote and directed and kind of, I don't want to say started, but was, I guess, featured into for the last nearly 20 years, I guess.
Some people who write music or lyrics, they say their most meaningful or their favorite pieces of music are the ones that required the least effort, and it just flows out of them sometimes. Did you have that experience with Yearbook?
It's funny. I don't really remember the actual writing of a lot of the tunes, just because there were so many of them, and it was something that I was doing every day. But I don't remember there ever being one where it was like, yes, this is a really good tune, I like this a lot. But there were a couple that I do remember thinking, this is awful, and I don't like this at all, and then going back to them and being like, no, I actually really like that.
So keeping up with the demand and writing music every day for a full year, did it help you to do what some songwriters do? They say they, if they see something that catches their eye in the run of a day that would inspire them to write, or play on words that you could use for a song title. Was that process useful for you?
Well, that was actually the most difficult thing, because they're tunes, they don't actually have words. I didn't have to worry about lyrics or anything like that. So that was half the battle right there, is just worrying about a melody, and that's all. But I did not necessarily make actual notes, but made a lot of mental notes about what I thought would be a funny tune title for that day. And again, because there's no words in the song, in the tunes, you don't have to really worry about what the title is. It doesn't have to make sense, and a lot of them don't. But they are, I guess, memorable.
There are many musicians in Cape Breton. One minute you see them playing the piano, then a few minutes later they're playing the guitar or mandolin like a wizard. Is there a relationship with the instruments that allows someone to have a natural understanding of another instrument? Is it a matter of theory, or how do you apply that knowledge, let's say, from the piano and then switch over to another stringed instrument?
I'm sure there is. Yeah, I know. I don't play any instruments other than, well, I guess, yeah, I play the piano and the keyboard accordion and a little bit of whistle. But, I mean, I think once you have a basic understanding of music, some of the fundamentals are kind of transferable from instrument to instrument. Although some of them are, I don't know why, I can't get my head around a guitar. I can make like 5 or 6 chords, and that's as far as my knowledge goes. And I think part of that is just because I didn't play it growing up too. Like, not that you can't pick up an instrument later on in life, but I was just so focused on the one, on the piano, that I just kind of stuck to that and didn't really do too much with any other instrument. But if it is an instrument that only is melodic, I tend to have a little bit of a better time if there's only one thing happening. Like, I would never play it for anybody, but I can play a slow air on the fiddle. It just because it's slow and it's one note most of the time.
So it seems like in your Project Yearbook, you were very generous to the other musicians on the album. And how do you go about giving a license to someone to contribute to the music without taking away from the idea of your music? It seems to be very fluid, and it seems you trust that the people with you on this album, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I do, and I love that question. Nobody has asked me that yet, but I really wanted to make the album project part of it as collaborative as possible, because the writing was such a solo experience. It was just me there, usually thinking at the end of the day, oh, I have to write a tune, I forgot today, but as long as I wrote before I fell asleep that day, it was fine. So I'd be writing a tune on my phone, just on the notation app that I had on my phone a lot of the time, and just like completely solo experience. But then with the album, I was thinking, okay, these tunes exist, I know these are all super talented musicians. I kind of just want to give them an idea or just give them the basic tune itself and say, just run with this and do your thing and kind of put your trust in them. And I'm so glad I did that because everybody who came back with anything, any ideas, they were just so much better than anything that I would have ever come up with on my own. And that was really one of the most rewarding parts of the project, is just kind of letting people who know their instruments just go and do their thing. I would love to do another project along those lines, and I don't think I would keep creative control myself over any project musically after having this experience, to be honest.
And speaking of that, Adam, you're in some pretty good company on the album, with some very well-known names and accomplished artists. And just to name a few, there's Rankin McGinnis, Brian Talbot, Emily Dingwall, and the list goes on. How did you get everyone on board with your book?
I had kind of a running list of local musicians that I've always wanted to work with, and some that I work with actually fairly frequently too, but because of the style of music that I play, that opportunity didn't really come up all that often, especially with Emily and Brian. Bass and drums is not really something that, in the context that I played it in anyway, that I ever really played it with fiddle music. So, they were kind of no-brainers to just give them a call and I don't know. I kind of, with project this size, I was kind of thinking, okay, this is the one time in my life that I'm going to do this. I want to do it, and I want to do it with people that I'd really like to have on it. So I was really fortunate that they said yes. And then immediately when the project finished, I thought, okay, I want to work with that again. How can I make this happen? So hopefully it's not the end of the project. Well, maybe the end of this project, but not the end of projects.
I guess you've been full steam ahead since the idea of this yearbook album surfaced until the release earlier this month. It was quite a long time, and you hear a lot of musicians and bands looking forward to a rest after a tour or making a studio album. And what did this do for your appetite in playing and writing music?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people, musicians included, who get really kind of burnt out from playing the same thing or playing too much or touring too much or all that. Then they kind of have to step away from it for a day, a week, a month, a year, or indefinitely, really, sometimes. That hasn't happened to me with the performance and the playing of music, but I honestly have not written one single tune since December 31st, 2018. And it's not because I shunned it or whatever. It's just kind of, I felt like, okay, I'm done for a while now. I don't have to do this, because it was such a daunting process to do that. I did have the discipline to do it every day when I was doing it, but now I'm like, I don't know. I kind of, maybe someday I'll write something, but it's not something I really have a drive to do, really, at this point. I don't know. That might come back at some point, but I don't know why that is. I don't necessarily consider it a bad thing. It's just kind of, I don't know, it ran its course.
Other than the endurance and the discipline you had to make this project, to write a song every day, sometimes more than one song a day, and what seems to be equally impressive is the wide range of different types of music on the album. It's almost like a musical buffet.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for, is because like all of these tunes are new, so there's no expectation of how they're supposed to sound. Like, they don't have to sound like traditional Cape Breton fiddle tunes, that's what I do. It's the music that I love and the music that I kind of spent the last 20 years of my life playing, but at the same time I have a lot of varied musical interests as well, and thought that it's a really good opportunity to incorporate some of those into a new project. So that was the thinking behind that. So the double album, first album, is 11 tracks of what ends up being, I think it's 19 tunes on the first album, and they are done in different styles, from like, I don't know, almost classical sounding to modern disco to like an 8-bit Nintendo game kind of thing. There's some New Orleans jazz influenced stuff in there, and like 60s doo-wop. It's all over the place. And then the second album is those tunes plus, I want to say 12 more. I think there's a total of 39 on the second album that are presented very traditionally, just with a piano and fiddle and guitar, and there's one track with bagpipes as well.
Okay, so we're going to play a tune in a second here. Many thanks to the talented Adam Young, releasing a very ambitious project called Yearbook. It's quite the undertaking, with a lot of teamwork involved from several
well-known artists, and there's certainly something there for everyone. You can learn more about the project by visiting Adam's website at www.adamcdyoung.com, but also check out his Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AdamYoungPiano. You'll find lots of great content there, including videos. And we're going to close out with the New Orleans jazz-inspired Corned Beef and Garbage. And we hope you will enjoy this and go online to learn more. Thanks very much, Adam, and all the best to you, whatever your next project will be.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the conversation. Hope you enjoy the tune.
Dialogue this week, we heard from Paul McDougall of The Good Sentence, CDU Women's Basketball Coach Fabian McKenzie, Fitness Guru Elaine Schwartz, and last but not least, Marathon Musician Adam Young. Thanks for listening. I'm Phil McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly. Sundays at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-849-9303 or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcast, available now online at coastalradio.ca.